This is late night podcasting going on here. This is why I'm in, like, if you see my face, it looks kind of like filtered because I have my dark mode because all my lights are kind of dim right now. So I need to make myself not look, and so you guys can see me, you know?
Yeah, you look like the Blair Witch Project right now.
I can't see anything. I can just see yellow and red right now because I have my shades on.
You and your fancy little fucking blue light blockers.
I blame Austin, man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a mustache. Dylan's bald. Braden's beard got thicker.
My beard got some oil tossed into it.
The boys are back. There's no fault. Well, technically, Dylan is the OG fat boy, if we're truly being honest. but we're not the fat boys. We're on Coach's Corner today because we're doing Q&A. So you guys gave us some good questions. Most of them, I think actually all of them are on training. This time, which is actually really good because last time, man, we could talk about hormones and everything for years. years. Training.
I mean, realistically, if we wanted to, we probably could talk about training for years too.
Oh, we also could
talk throw about that training. Out there.
We've literally spent the last like 3 days in our group chat actually talking about training. So I would say so.
Yeah.
But we'll kick everything off first before we even answer questions, I guess. Let's someone start off. Dylan, you could start off. How was your week? How was your last?
My week was pretty good. Today and yesterday, I had some team lifts in a couple local cities. So yesterday was in my home city, and then today I met a group of clients in a city that's about 2 hours outside of the one I live in. So that was really fun. There was about 20 of us both days. Just got to kick it with some people. It was just really nice to get it, like, you know, based on the past situation everyone is tired of hearing about, you know, I haven't seen, like, you know, been around that many people in a group of people that I'm like-minded with. And it was really good to see the gym, like, filled with people, is rocking, lots of hard sets, good training. So that always makes me happy. And I got some business stuff on the go. Other than that, that's just a regular work week.
For me, it was same old, man, just keeping on. But no, it was a good week here too. Productive week. I had a bit of a surprise that also kind of sent me over the edge and I was a little upset about, but a very good thing to be upset about. But I randomly got a phone call the other day and I seen the look on Kim's face and she could tell I was quite annoyed. But I get a random phone call the other day and it's this dude and I couldn't really understand him. He was speaking, he had a very heavy accent and I'm trying to understand what he's saying. And he's trying to tell me he's got these big pallets to drop off of my house. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't have pallets of anything ordered to my house. Like, what are you talking about? And then he starts going through and he goes through a purchase order. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay. I understand what this is. It was the equipment that I ordered through Prime. Oh. So I was super, super excited. But the caveat is they were supposed to give me a few days notice before it showed up so I could get the stuff pulled out of my garage and get the new stuff dropped at my place. And I was going to have my other stuff in storage. But until I get that phone call, I need my equipment in my garage because I also have training sessions I need to do. So they didn't give me a warning. And buddy's on the way to my house with my equipment. And I'm like, what do you want me to do with it? You're just going to put these pieces on my driveway and leave them there? Like, you can't. And he's trying to bargain with me on the phone. And I was like, listen, here's what's going to happen. You guys were supposed to call me. You didn't. So you're going to hold that equipment for me until I have the space and you can drop that equipment off. And long story short, it worked out good. So we will be getting that equipment this week. So I'm really excited for that. Get to try out some new pieces. But I was also quite annoyed because I was neck deep in things I had to do. And all of a sudden it was like, is this guy going to leave my equipment on the road? But no, it's good.
What'd you get?
So I got pretty much all of their accessories. So like wedges. Wow. I got new wedges. I got the handles, but then I got their leg press coming. It's almost like the squat press, but like kind of combined with a higher foot plate. I got their leg extension curl combo. I got selectorized cable system with a squat rack built in. And then on that, I bought the centering bench, or centering device and a centering bench so you can center the bench right between the cables. And then I got just attachments, like a roller to do rear foot elevated squats on the rack, a lat pull down seat to do pull downs with the cables. What else did I get from them?
You got it all.
I got a couple more things. Yeah, I can't remember all of it, but there will be more in the future too. But again, we've kind of shifted gears with what we're going to use that equipment for now. So I think there'll be some really cool pieces coming in the
next. You know what's really funny about this story on the back end is I have a little bit better of an idea where some of this may go, but it's funny because you're so bro that like, no matter how big our business gets, you're still like basing the drop off on your split. Like, no, bro, it's not today. I told you I need 2 days notice because then I have to take my payment. And, like, this is going to fuck up my shit. So,
this
no
stuff
way.
Is not being used for another like, 5 days.
Like, listen,
it's
man.
So funny. Like, a regular person would be like, okay, no gym. Yeah. Like, if it was your wife, if it was Kim, she'd be like, okay, then I'm not going to train the next 3 days. We'll just pull this out now and you just back the new stuff in and I'll figure it out. No, we're not doing that.
No. I told you I wanted notice. I told you I have a training session. I need to know. I want that notice. And you're going to hold that until my training session's done and I can get the time to put this stuff in storage. But anyways, no, my week was good, man. We got a couple new athletes on the roster. Rolling through some preps with people and seeing some good changes week to week with some of my athletes. I had, you guys already know about this one, but had a pretty extensive case that I had to kind of bring forth with an individual who just has to put in some drastic lifestyle changes to end up getting where we want to get to. And those are always tough on that end to hear.
I would say drastic is an understatement.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's also really cool because as you guys know, like we know what the end result is going to be when we get there. It's not fun getting there, but once you get there, it's a whole lot of fun because you just see so much change so quick and you see a new person essentially. And that part of it just makes me so happy when you see those big, big changes with whether it's not even just within the physique, but of the person. Now they're happy again because they're not dealing with this thing. Right. So that's that was one thing this week that we've been dealing with on the front end. But other than that, things are great. No complaints here. I got to go away next weekend to Calgary for a posing seminar and going to try to do kind of similarly what Dylan had there. Have some of the people that I coach down in Calgary that I don't really get the opportunity to link up with often come say hi and just chat for a bit and hopefully get team lift in. And I got Tessa coming down from Victoria, so I'll put her through a nice training session and we'll have some fun there. And that's her.
Yeah, my week. I'm just hitting new lows all week. I'm just starting. My body's a fucking furnace right now. So I'm just slowly just losing. As you can see, this is why I kept my beard for so long now. Cause now you can see like my face was like a fucking Michelin man whenever I started this. And now it's starting now I look skinny. Now I'm like, nope, time to grow the beard back. Cause I'm looking small. Everything's actually going well. Performance is still really, really high. I almost matched my deadlift last week up 10 pounds. I missed by one rep, but I'll take it for training on my own. I was like 20 minutes ahead of time. So I always take notice of how quick my sessions are going compared. So I had a few training sessions on my own this weekend, which was actually really nice. I realized I can get through sessions in like an hour instead of 2 hours, which just helps overall with pumps and me feeling good by the end of the session. Whereas 2 hours, I'm usually fucking, I'm done. I'm like, get me the fuck out of here. Whereas done in an hour, I'm like, okay, I'm good to go for like another like 20 minutes if I really wanted to.
Man, I'm the opposite. When I'm at a deficit like you are, I feel like my training sessions are 3.5 hours because I'm like, I need another 25 minutes before I hit another set on that. I'm not ready to do that again.
I mean, I still have a good amount of carbs in my intro. I'm like at 65 grams right now. So oh, yeah. I still have a good bit in intro. I'm just feeling good. Business is good. Had a client start this past week. He dropped like 8 pounds in 1 week. Posted him this. I was like, what is going on here? He actually got down to a low of like 10 pounds. At one point, his body came back up and I was like, hold your horses. I was like, whoa. Yeah.
I was like, my plan's
doing really, really well right now, though. I was like, ooh, I like this. And he dropped like all his inflammation. And I posted him this morning on my page and he looks completely different now compared to what he was even just last week. So Now I have a
run. That's super cool, though. That's super cool, though, too, right? And Dylan and I have had a brief conversation about this, actually, when we were filming last weekend. If you put somebody in a situation, whether it's on purpose or accidental, where you may have underestimated what they need on a caloric value, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden, the inflammation drops off super quick. Well, now you can bring up their food, still see it trend downwards, but without the inflammation. Whereas if you just started a slow and maybe you drop them 150 or 200 calories from where they were at, and the inflammation is going to slowly come down over the next 4 weeks, but you've just cleared that damn quick. Now you can see things better.
I just did. Yeah. I just did what I did in a week, which probably would have taken me if I actually nailed his thing rather than just guessing. Like, I was just like, oh, well, I'll just place it here and see what happens. Cause he didn't know how much calories he was eating.
Yeah, exactly.
He was eating out a few times a week. And I was like, okay, if I put him on this low of carbs, like it wasn't even that low of carbs, it was like 300 and 200. Like,
yeah.
I was just like, oh, let's see what type of response we get out of this. And so he dropped that much weight. I just added in like 70 grams of carbs this week and in both days. And I mean, protein's still not high. So I still have another avenue to even keep boosting metabolism to keep going up.
Well, and psychologically, is he a weight loss client?
I mean, he's getting ready to go into police force. So I'm trying to get him in shape, bro.
Well, but a lot of people too, like psychologically, that can be really good early on, right?
Yes.
To kickstart things. And they see the first week a big drop and like, it can be a double-edged sword though. Cause then they expect more week to week sometimes too. So you gotta, that's where we talk to people, but no, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm doing good. Business is good. I had a client inquiry call, but I was supposed to have a client inquiry call today and they didn't show up. So I guess it's a whatever. So I do have spaces open for coaching if anybody wants coaching. I mean, I'm pretty sure we all probably do. Braden's more selective. I did release my new logo today. So if you haven't checked it out, go check it out.
Nice.
We actually did it with the bonds are actually the protein or amino acid bonds in the back. So kind of resembles more of the fitness aspect along with the what Symbiote actually stands for. And I like how clean it is, how modern.
Science meets fitness.
Yeah, because that's what we do, right? We do science, but we say fuck you to actual research at some points, right? We don't just follow research. I think Dylan's probably the biggest person who doesn't follow research at all and just says, fuck it. Everything I do is anecdotal. He's like, well, everything
I do. A lot more. I was thinking about this the other day. It's like, if you get a good roster size, you basically run small studies anyway.
Yeah.
And you have a perfect control group because you have people controlling it. You're trying to control their sleep, their stress, their nutrition. What? There's not a study that does that well. You know, it's like I started to see this as my roster got bigger and I would hear coaches talking about this in the past. And I would think like, well, I just didn't understand it. It's because I didn't have it. And now it's like, oh, I see what they meant actually. Yeah, okay. Well, you can just get a feel for things, you know?
I was actually thinking about conversations us three have had lots too about throwing darts at a dartboard. And I was like, and this is, it might even resonate with you guys. Like, you are way, way more likely to hit a fucking bullseye if your entire wall is covered in dartboards.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like if you got one dartboard on a fucking 10 by 20 wall, that's going to be a really, really hard bullseye to hit. If you got 100 dartboards on a 10 by 20 wall and the whole wall is a dartboard, you might hit that fucking bullseye because realistically, as we all know, there's way more than one way it's going to cap.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you just follow the fucking research, you might be not throwing the dart hard enough to even make it to the wall.
No, you got to see. You got to test what happened. Like
anecdote doesn't lie a lot of the time too.
So I brought up so example. We'll get into questions, guys. Don't worry.
Here we go again.
We do tangents a lot, but I was talking about my prep client, right? And he's like, "Well, if we're seeing great changes, why add cardio?" And I was like, "You know what? I just want to see." I was like, "Your biofeedback says I can push you, so I'm going to push you right now." And I was like, "Hey, if it turns out your body starts to lose things, or you're looking way less full than where I want you to be, or your rate of loss is more than I want you to be, like, hey, we'll just pull back to what we had before." It's a pretty
simple assessment. Come in handy, you know, it's a really easy tool.
It's just like, hey, when you go do darts, you throw darts, you eventually got to go get them out of the dartboard. Like you're going to have to pick them out at some point. So if you mess up one thing, it's not the end of the thing. And so I think a lot of people think like, oh, the coach is adding food. Well, the coach wants to add food to kind of see, they can always just take back that food. Like if we start to see negative biofeedback from that, you can always just, hey, Let's just go back to where we were and do a, yeah. maybe a little less, maybe a little less increment up, right? So I feel like you have to. And that's what we talked about. We talked about this with my prep athletes specifically. I was just like, I wrote that the other day in the post. I was like, trust my instincts and go. Everything yeah. that I've done, 100%. Everything that I've done so far in that prep, one has been guided by a few people. And two, I mean, I've said the idea and majority of the time, the people who I go to have agreed with me doing it at this certain point. So I know that trusting my instincts, I'm way better now at trusting my instincts. And especially when it comes down to a prep where, you know, you can't make those, like you're, like we've said, your darts have to be just a bit more accurate in terms of.
For sure. And precise. Well, and then, like, it's cool because there's like, man, it's preps are super, and I guess fat loss phases in general, but if you're going to the extreme, preps are super unique in the sense that there is no fucking rule book. You know what I mean? Like, so there's this, and a lot of the times you're lowering food for the majority, right? But like, you may have the odd person where you are lowering food at the beginning and all of a sudden they fart fucking just start dropping way too fast, even though you didn't make a big food drop. And all, maybe their body is just crazy responsive at this body weight, you know what I mean? And they're recomping now. And like, I recently had this with a athlete who's a, I showed you pictures of him, Anthony, and like super, super dense. And we had his cardio not very high. His food had come down a little bit and he was moving a little bit. And all of a sudden it like ramped up and all of a sudden he just started dropping. And it's like, whoa, 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 we're going to go the opposite direction. We're going to bring your food up. And oh, well, you're getting leaner. Oh, we can afford to bring your food up. And oh, you're still getting leaner, right? And that's the really, really damn cool thing about PEDs some of the times.
Yeah. Oh, that's the, can I say that is the best part about this coaching experience so far during prep is not the fact, is the fact that I'm starting to see everything like that you guys have seen and that you guys have like always talked about. Like I'm starting to witness it now. And I'm like, ooh, this is like coaching heaven. I'm like, you just get to implement a sprinkle of this. And then this time you sprinkle that, like, it's like seeing what the effects of those have. It's like pretty cool to see what happens when you fully optimize those biofeedback markers. And then you add in what really gives just an extra, that extra 5% of performance enhancing that really allows to take it to the next level. And you're like, oh, now we get to see what it is, because a lot of people don't do that to the point where they take PEDs and they don't have those biofeedback markers optimized. Yeah. And it's just like, they don't change. Right. But when you have someone so optimized biofeedback wise that when you add in just like, even just a little bit, this is why we always preach less is more, because you don't need a ton. If your biofeedback's like on, like if your biofeedback's on lock, like you don't need to push as hard as you think you do. So I'm now starting to see it. So it's like really, really exciting to actually see this aspect and get this experience, because I'm having a ball doing it. Let's just say I'm having a fun time being able to do it and talk with and being able to talk with other people who do preps too, right? Like in other coaches, like now I get to be in that seat, like driving, like guiding the car. Like, and I haven't had that, and I couldn't relate to a lot of people talking about competition preps and what they're doing with clients. Like now I'm getting that experience. And it's
wait till you get to your first peak week, man.
Oh God, don't remind me. Don't.
No, man. You're like I said, trust your instincts. It's fun, man. It's fun. You're gonna know how he responded through the entirety of that prep, and you're gonna have to throw darts. But that's when you're gonna learn and understand things better. And I'm still learning every prep, man. No two preps are the same, even with the same athlete, yep. Right? So what worked with athlete A in 2021 very, 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 very well probably won't work with athlete A in 2023, because well, if athlete A is the same person they were in 2021, we probably shouldn't be putting athlete A on stage.
Well, you boys ready to get to the questions?
I know you want to ask also them.
One thing I want to add before the questions is very quickly, you asked me about this week. Today I got to do a small presentation on psych for athletes with our Team Miller coaching group, and I'm gonna give a shout out to Braden for giving me the floor to do that, because it was fun.
Oh yeah,
I'm gonna give Dylan a huge shout out on that too, because it was really, really fucking cool. And I know for a fact our other coaches absolutely loved it. And some of them pre-meeting knew that they had to leave because of certain things. And the meeting ended up going long and not one of them even thought about leaving. So it was really cool. I loved it.
I get to spend 3 hours or so next week with that guy discussing all things training, and I could not be more excited.
Yeah.
I'm so excited just to dig into him because we haven't like, as much as we talk, I haven't actually had like a session with him where we just talked about things where I learn from him every single time we converse, but I've never directly been able to bombard with what I want to
do. Wait till we all get the opportunity to just train and chill.
Yeah. That's where it gets good.
Yeah.
That will happen. 2020. What are we in? 2022, 2020, and maybe end of 2022, beginning of 2023.
Yeah.
We'll find a way.
So
I know you want to answer the first question. Let me read you the first question.
Yeah. He does want to answer the first question. You can read it to him.
Who wants to ask? Oh, am I asking?
I can ask you it.
Braden's going to ask.
Okay.
Is there a limit to how strong you can get as a natty? Strength plateau, meaning like in your overhead press, bench, squat, etc.
I don't bench. No, it's squat. So I don't do it. But I kind of hate this question. There's a reason why I actually hate this question. It's because it puts a limitation. They're already kind of putting a limitation on what you can do. For everyone that doesn't know, I still have my natty status. So I am my self-proclaimed natty king over here in my area. I'll just say that, but there's no limit. I say a lot of these things are a lot of mindset. Per se, I'm going through dieting right now and I'm getting stronger. Like, there is eventually going to be a limit, of course, right? But I've seen guys who deadlift and they'll do their natural and they do like 500 plus pounds, like, or 600 plus pounds. Like, I've seen things that people don't think is real when you're natural. And it comes down to a lot of genetic components. There's an optic of what can you do in terms of strength is a genetic component to it. So, you know, for me, I don't deadlift pretty well. Like, I'll do like me and my friend. I'll compare me and my friend real quick. My one friend's Natty. He does a 520, a 500 plus pound deadlift right now. Okay. I'm 2 years older than him, or a year and a half older than him. And I do 335. So there's a big, big difference there in terms of strength component, right? Of course, I'm training for hypertrophy. So it's different than if I had sumo, it'd probably be different. Right. But there is.
Yeah. Leverages are a big one there too, based on like who he is as a person.
But I just hate that question. I just hate that question because it just sets a precedent of limitation. And I think a lot of people go into training thinking how strong they think they're weak. Like when you start to decrease food, everyone's like, oh shit, how weak am I going to get? Like, usually it's the opposite, right? It's always like you end up getting a positive feedback from that, especially in the beginning, where you'll actually get more energy, better pumps, more strength out of it. So there is a limit, of course, and it's so specific. I can't tell you where that limit is for whoever asked this question. Like, to truly be honest, I can't answer that because it's up to you, really. And it's up to how far you're able to go into here to unlock that. Because I find that when I'm able to dig deep, and we've all discussed like putting to gun to head mentality, like when you truly take it to that type of level, your strength is, you will go far beyond what you thought your strength capacity could be. So there is a plateau. You don't know when you're going to get to it, but I can damn well assure you that what you think is your plateau is not what your actual plateau will be.
I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit with my answer, and I'll be short and sweet. I don't hate the question, but my answer is, yes, 100%, absolutely, no doubt about it. There is 100%, 1,000,000% a limit as to how strong you can get as a natural athlete. If not, everyone would be walking around deadlifting 1,000 pounds, squatting 1,000 pounds, etc. But like you said, that limit, if that's what you think about as a natural athlete, is, oh, I'm at my limit. I would honestly bet on my life, 99% of people that say they are at their limit or their genetic potential are not at their true genetic potential. Because if have you sat there and nailed your diet to a T for the last 5 years? Have you executed your training fucking flawlessly for the past 5 years? Have you done every single thing that you absolutely can? Have you efficiently got your mobility into a place where every movement pattern is maximized? Because myself, and this is, again, it's no fucking hidden fact that I'm not natural. And when I used to bodybuild, I was using PEDs, and I've since 2018 been on a cruise dose of tests. Now, essentially, my natural test range is within a natural range. So I'm not natural, but my levels are, and they have been since 2018. And I know for a fact right now at this moment in time, and previously to this moment in time, when I was stiff leg deadlifting 455 as a natural athlete, just with natural test levels, it was stronger and a better lift than when I was on PEDs, because my mechanics of the movement were inefficient and I was pulling with the wrong muscles and I was stimulating the wrong muscles. When I fixed my back after my accident, when I was smaller and doing way more mobility work, I became a lot better puller and my movement progressed and I became way stronger. You know what I mean? So, I mean, there's also a genetic limit to people that are on PEDs.
Yeah.
We all have our limits, but most people, it's a lot farther than you think.
So I would answer this a little differently. If this was asked of me, I would say, I would ask them the question in inversely. So I would say, I don't know. Is there a limit? Neither do you. Off into the unknown you go forever to try and find it. Away you go.
I like it.
Because like that's all there is to it. It's like, how long do you want to play that game? It's either forever till you start to age and it's impossible. So which is about probably 60. So like, you know, or 45 to 60, depending on your genetics. But until then, just keep doing what you're doing and then improve that forever. And then at some point, you'll either enhance yourself or you won't, but you'll do what you're going to do. So it's like, you know, you go find it. Either way, you need to find
yeah,
it.
That's true.
Yeah, just don't set a limit. That's all I got to say. Just don't set a limit on what you can do.
And then it flips it from like questioning it to being curious about the outcome. Because then it's like, Well, I don't know what I could become, because what the hell do I know? I don't know anything. We don't know anything.
Each session, just set a target higher than what you got last time. That's all I will say. Like, if you continue, a lot of people don't do that. Sorry, I'm continuing this on. We want it to be more straightforward. But I see a lot of people, and I ask for their logbooks, right, for a reason. Like, some people, if I question how hard they're training, I ask for their logbooks week to week, because I want to know that they're actually pushing that higher and higher. Because I'll see the same weights on the bar like 4 weeks later, and I'm like, that's not how I would prepare. Like, I would be so locked in that like my weights would be going up within a month.
Unless the progressions are happening in another way, shape, or form.
Unless they are. Yes, exactly. But I normally a lot of people aren't lifting to the point they're lifting such lower weight that they should be adding in load to progress those things. I find you have to progress past that limit and then take it back. And then you start a little bit back. And then you pass that limit a little farther. That limit gets a little farther. Then you take it back. And then you'll get to where that first limit was and you'll be able to take it even further like than before. So that's how I find that. At least I might be too obsessive about training though. So I've really adopted a Jordan Peters type of mind when it comes down to it. And I'm a little bit psycho with my training. So
has it worked for him? I don't know. The guy's a 300-pound bowling ball at 5'6". So yeah, I think so.
Awesome. Well, that's the first question. Okay. I'll ask a question. I'll get one. Let's see what we got. Dylan, you might like this one. Okay. Breath work while training.
Yeah, for sure. I think bodybuilders specifically should learn how to breathe through their nose as much as of the session as they can to control their nervous system, because it'll actually stimulate the muscle better. And it'll translate, in my way of thinking, it'll translate better to your stage presence, because when I was on stage posing, and I'm by far not a great bodybuilder, but I was tired of shit, you know? So it's like, and I don't even have like 250 pounds of muscle, and that stuff's sucking oxygen like crazy. So if you're more efficient with your breathing under load, which is what that is, I think it's like practicing for that during your training. And I'm not saying all the time, and I'm not saying to be obsessive about it, but you know, we don't pay attention to it. You know, like after you get off a set of like hacks, and yeah, you're dying, just get airing because you're sucking wind, like you're on the floor. Okay, fair enough. But we usually take like 5 minutes between those brutal sets. So, okay, for 60 seconds, you're absolutely destroyed. You're just crawling around. You're catching your breath through any hole it'll come through. You get up and then, okay, I should have a drink now and pay attention. I should start to try and regulate my breathing through my nose. Can I get enough oxygen? In slow, out through my mouth. I think it makes a big difference. It does for me, especially if you get intense with your training, it helps regulate your nervous system a lot better, I find. I don't leave feeling so mentally fried if I pay attention to my breathing, at least a little bit. I'm not obsessive about it. I just want to train hard. I don't want it to be a hindrance. I just want it to be a...
Yeah, I agree with that too. I think it's very important. I think another aspect to think about is bracing and being able to breathe through a brace and understanding how to breathe through a brace. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're holding your breath through a set, you're going to limit yourself because oxygen consumption is huge for output, right? So you need to be supplying yourself with oxygen to continue to drive muscular contractions and so forth. I mean, that's why you see people pass out with doing one rep max, holding their breath and shit and fall over. Like they just have no oxygen, right? And like now at the same time, going back to the bracing, if you can hold a steady braced position and learn how to breathe through that. And like Dylan said, if you learn how to breathe through your nose, and actually using your correct breathing techniques that we should be, rather than just breathing with our chest and so forth, you're gonna be in a way better position. And then again, I guess, leading off what Dylan said, one of the most distracting things you can see as a bodybuilder on stage is a belly moving in and out, right? Now, if you have perfected your breathing, you're not gonna draw negative attention to you. So it just, I don't have really anything to add outside of what Dylan said, other than the one bracing part. If you can learn how to properly breathe and hold a brace, it's going to be more beneficial for pretty much all of your bigger movements for sure.
I might be wrong here, but I might want to add something. I believe I learned this from Jevin, or I might have been reading it on one of Jevin's posts. And I think he mentioned talking about like mouth breathing, like before you're about to head into a set, start to make your breathing just a bit more quicker.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I do this with people all the time.
Stimulating your sympathetic nervous system and bringing in that really big fight or flight mode, like right before you're about to head into the set, I find is really, really key. But I also find though that on leg day sets, I find that a lot of people struggle with, and myself included, anxiety within those sessions, just from like performance, like having to maintain that performance, right? So I find a lot of bodybuilders, if they're really obsessed with their training, have the same thing. So like Dylan said, like being able to actually control your breathing, even going into those sets too, can actually help. Like as much as I just said, hey, you want to start making your breath a little quicker. But I even find that keeping your breath really regulated, like before the going into the sets and keeping calm, leads to a better, like right before, then like right as you're about to lift that weight off, you get those quick breaths going and it just stimulates you really, really hard to get the system firing. But I think going into that, being able to have those deep breathing is really, really important. And also I agree with that with the stage presence and the bracing too as well. So
yeah. So it's like with the,
go ahead, Dylan.
with the training, I'm lucky enough to be in a position. I like that about my geography as I get to train with a lot of my clients and see. So I still do a lot of kind of like in-person stuff and I do like it, you know? So like I've learned a lot of tricks over the years. I do like what you said, Anthony. I try to do both actually. So I just think when you're learning to regulate your own nervous system through breathing techniques. So preset, I'll tell, if someone's like, Hey coach, can you come and spot me? This happens all the time, especially a leg day exercise. I'm like, okay, I'll get behind them. I'll tell them, okay, look at the hack squat. I want you to visualize yourself PRing right now. And I want you to get your eyes locked on the target and let's go. So then I'll say, okay, get in the sled. And then I tell them, we're going to go in 10 seconds and we're going to count down and you're going to start accelerating your breaths.
Yeah.
at a slow volume dial until 10 when they're almost choppy. I want you to unrack this and drive everything through your feet and through your quad. Mm-hmm. And they will for sure PR. And then they get off and they're like, oh my God, I did 7 more reps than last time. And I'm like, wow, imagine that. What happens when you get on target and pay attention to what you're doing? You know, and it's really, really crazy how it works.
That was one piece I was going to add when you guys said that, because the post you were talking about, I didn't see it or whatever, but like, that's something that I do and I didn't even realize I do subconsciously. Yep. I sit there super calm between my sets, and part of it with me is because of my previous heart issues. I'm always trying to regulate my heart between sets, bring it down to a really good place, which is good for recovery between sets anyways. But before I actually go into my set, when I'm right about to hit it, probably 10 seconds before, I'm weird. People might think I'm weird. I sometimes close my eyes before sets and I just get in this like zone. And I almost think I do the opposite. Like neurologically, I psych myself up and I tap in to my sympathetic nervous system before I change my breath. And I put myself in that fight or flight mode naturally, like, you are going to die. This weight is actually going to kill you. And then when you do that, your breath speeds up and you get in this, like, you're in a whole nother planet, and then you're just going, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or maybe it is me just telling myself, okay, start breathing, but it happens. And then all of a sudden you're just
going. You can do it in inverse. It's usually I could probably point out once you do this test we talked about, I can point out to you exactly why that is.
Yeah.
I already know, but I just don't want to get into it. We better answer the question.
This is just a quick side note. This is why I choose like really, really like classical, like people are like, what the fuck do you listen to? I'm like listening to like a violin version of Mad World. Like that's what I'll listen to on leg day, or I'll listen to like My Immortal, or I'll listen to something like Beethoven. Like, people ask why, like, your music choice does regulate your breathing, and mine actually helps me. Like, that keeps me calm, that keeps me, because I realize my heart rate can get really high, and in between those sets it gets down. I'm like, oh, I'm not that bad, I'm actually really like good
I feel like I might perform better listening to Beethoven, because I'd be so fucking pissed off. I just remember last week I was in my garage training with my training partner, and I was about to do my top set of like isolateral standing rows, and some like stupid love song came on, and I was so mad. Like I was literally like kind of locked in, ready to do my set, and it just came on, and like I stopped. I'm like, no, we got to change this. I got to get myself ready to go again. I can't do this. So man, I don't know for myself. Like, I hear 100% what you're saying. I'm just arguing here for me.
And you would make.
I would actually. I might perform good, because I'd be so pissed off at the choice of music.
I'll let you. Whenever I come train, I'll give you my headphones and I'll choose the song for you. So then you'll just lock in and fucking. We won't even have headphones in, to truly be honest. We'd probably be screaming at each other the whole fucking time anyway.
I was gonna say, either two things are gonna happen. I'm going to absolutely kill the weights, or I'm going to kill you.
I'm in a different country, so don't kill me. All right, next one. Let's see. I don't like. I'll did this one last, because this is good. That's gonna be a long one. I'll do Brayden. Variations of glute kickbacks. Well, why do you favor certain variations over others?
Okay, so I know for sure it was one of my athletes who asked this, and. honestly, this could be a really long one too, but I'm not going to make it one. There's inefficient and efficient ways to train, right? A kickback is a movement that's simple yet very difficult, and most people do it wrong because there's a lot of things going on. It's really, really easy to extend the hip while changing the pelvic position a ton. And when that's happening, you're not necessarily targeting the target muscles. Like, it's no different than if you're doing a seated hip abduction, right? Like, people think this is the most amazing glute med exercise in the world. Well, when you sit at 90 degree hip flexion and you abduct, you're not actually using your glute med, you're using your piriformis. Like, yes, you're gonna feel that in the outer glute because it's a deep hip muscle, but it's just not efficient, right? Like, same idea, if you're swinging your leg back and arching your back, you're probably going to feel that in the glute some, because the glute is still working, But what about everything else working around it instead of isolating that tissue and moving it the proper patterns? Now, again, I know myself, I genuinely prefer a couple types of kickbacks, and I prefer just kind of a glute max targeted kickback and a 45 degree kickback targeting the glute med. Well, it just makes sense. The muscle runs in that direction. The line of pull is lined up with the muscle fibers. You are pulling in the direction of the fibers. That is what is going to get the muscle short and long in the best, most efficient way possible. That's literally all I can add to that. If we try a bunch of different kickbacks, sensation might be higher in one, and there's situations where I might tell an athlete, you know what, there's not no value to sensation, but if you give me a little bit of rope and I let you start here where you feel that sensation, and we really, really isolate this movement to get you doing it better, and then I can speak to you in a manner that I can make sense of why would we do it with a cable in this fashion, and you treat it like we just treated the movement you felt the high sensation on, I guarantee you, you're going to get that sensation on this movement too, because physiologically it works. There is no way, like, that is where the muscle is firing. That is the action of the muscle. That is the insertion. That is the origin. That's literally how it works. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to get too complex with it, but it's fact, right? Like, you talk about a bicep curl. Well, why would you choose one bicep curl over another? There's always reason. And that essentially would be the reason why I'm choosing some kickbacks over another. Less knee flexion, you know what I mean? Less pelvic movement, less pelvic rotation, that kind of stuff. More stability.
Yeah. Dylan?
Yeah, pretty much that. This is like,
all right, awesome.
The ones that work.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that a lot of people just don't perform them correct.
Yeah, that's it. 100%.
Like, that's just it. Like, with a glute max, like, they'll end up like actually kicking back where it's more like a swoop. It's more like a scoop.
Well, I think the problem is too, is like social media gives all these novel stimulus and novel movement patterns that are so unique and fun and everything. And this girl has great glutes from doing that. It's like, that girl could have great glutes from doing a fucking leg press in a handstand position with a shoulder press machine. Like, you know what I mean? Like, no matter what she does, she's going to have great glutes. That's not you. That's not you as a person. We need to actually do the most efficient movements possible to build the most amount of tissue possible. Period. End of conversation.
Awesome. Yeah, that answers it. My favorite two are glute max and glute med. Glute med's actually my favorite one out of them all, just because I feel like a lot of girls end up need more glute med. So I find I'm utilizing that way more. And the range
is also fine. It's funny too, and you guys probably have a very high correlation with this too. Normally, the people doing kickbacks very wrong have low back issues.
Yep.
And they no longer want low back issues. And then you work to correct the glute focused kickback, and it's a lot of pelvic movement. And if you isolate that and make the range of motion smaller or line it up differently and have them to stop moving, they feel like, because it's not how people are doing it on Instagram, it's not correct. But now their back is not taking over, their glute is doing the work. And if they just beat the hell out of that for the next 10 weeks in that training block, it's going to progress. They're probably going to help. They're going to stop picking that scab that is low back pain, and they're going to allow it to potentially heal a little better too, right?
Yep. I'm going to kick this one off. So someone asked about rep ranges, just rep ranges. And then they said, and the importance of warm-up sets. So where should we start with this? Should I start with rep ranges or warm-up sets for this one? Because I have a really... I mean, I've talked about who I learned from, and I have a very good philosophy when it comes down to training and how strong you should get. And people are like, "Ooh, what's the magic rep range?" Right? Well, I could tell you, any one of my sets is between 6 to 30 reps.
Just gonna say that.
Yep. And I'm just like, and people are always just like, man, I think this is me. Like, this is late night Anthony. This is rant Anthony is coming out today.
Let him out, baby.
But a lot of people are just asking, what's a magical rep range? They think like 8 to 12 is a magical rep range for hypertrophy. And I'm like, no, someone just developed that off research. Like, but they also developed off research that you can get anywhere you can get hypertrophy from 6 to 30 reps. So it's just people just get fucking strong in every rep range. Like every single rep range. This is why I program anything from 6 to 10 reps on movements to 10 to 15 to 15 to 20. And then sometimes I'm saying, hey, Dylan knows because I just challenged my youngest client. I was just like, fuck it. You got 13 reps this past week on leg press. Good. I want you to get 20. I want you to get 20 plus. I'm going to throw a Widowmaker in there at some sort of point because I like to test the will of the people.
Yeah.
And I like to see how far mentally, and this is just me. I'm a little bit psychotic with clients sometimes, but I choose it with specific clients. I'm like, how far can I break you down? Like to actually make you push yourself mentally past that block that you keep holding yourself through. But I am like for things, like I'll have an example. I do different rep ranges for back, but majority of my back is between 6 to 10 and 10 to 15. I really don't find much. I really find getting really strong and rowing a lot of weight, like heavy reps, even in the lower rep range, really has made my back grown. And I will say it's probably been one of my best body parts I've grown to and since I started working with Mark. And Mark doesn't choose rep ranges, right? It's just one set to failure. So I kind of pick and choose how I feel and want to do it. But like say something for delts. Delts I'll keep outside of pressing, I'll keep 10 to 20 reps, 10 to 30 reps typically. I don't like to go anything less because lateral raises, you're not going to get, I find you don't get anything out of less than 10 reps. Now like legs, 10 to 20 reps. Heavy though, like really, really fucking heavy, 10 to 20, like you're dying either way. So just get strong in every single rep and utilize every single rep range you're programming. Like in one sort of capacity, have those long sets where you really test your, not only your, we talked about breathing, your oxygen capacity, but you test like how far you can really actually take that set, like beyond what you thought you could. Whether that's even just the Widowmaker where you breathe and go, breathe, get another two. Like, just get strong in every rep range because it's just going to benefit you no matter what. You're going to progress if you do it in every single rep range. Your blood flow is going to be better. Connection to muscles are going to be better. You're just overall just going to get mentally and physically better by getting stronger in every single rep range.
I agree, huge time. And that's usually how I would answer this question. 5 to 30 for sure. And a nice thing about the day and age we live in, and there was a day and age where literature basically said that 9 to 12. And there's literally been literature come out within the last couple of years that proves that hypertrophy is available in that 5 to 30 rep range. Right. And like realistically, if you think about it super logically, you put a weight on a bar that you can do for 5 reps. If you literally don't change that load, but you continue to progress that movement until you're doing 30 reps, I guarantee you will be growing throughout that entire time you're progressing that movement. All the way through that, right? You're not going to hit 20 reps suddenly and your body's going to say, I am done growing, baby. Not anymore. Not today. Not when you pass 12 reps. You know what I mean? Like you are overloading. There's some sense of stimulus. Now, of course, if you're doing 100 reps, well, that's not enough stimulus. But I agree. I think there's time and place. Don't sit there and program yourself a 5 to 30 rep range on every exercise. pick and choose, give yourself targets and just stick and move, right? Like you hit that target or you blow past that target. Basically, I know you're looking to do the Allen Iverson thing right now.
No, I said, or just hire one of us to tell you how many reps you should be doing within the set. You don't have availability for coaching.
Very true. But that's the other thing, right? Like lots of times I'm going to change the actual rep ranges my athletes are doing. Somebody will, I'll watch them do an RDL for 6 weeks in that 5 to 8 rep range. And they'll be loading it. And I'm going to say to them, okay, I don't want you to load this anymore. I want you to push this up to 15 reps. Don't touch this load until you're hitting 15 reps with that weight, 15 to 16 reps. And now we're going to work in the 13 to 16 range here. And it's just, right, you can make changes all around. I think it happens all the way throughout. So I'll leave it at that. I don't need to add any more there.
Yeah, I think that too. If I was getting mischievous, I would bet there's probably benefit up to 50.
There's benefit up to 100. There's technically benefit. I mean, maybe not hypertrophy standards, but I do sometimes I plug in dumbbell lateral sets, like one set, however many sets it takes to get to 100 reps. Like I'll do that. Like I like to do that every so often to some clients, but for what we're trying to do, just get strong in 5 to 30 reps. You'll be money. Now
I do find with that too. And like we were saying before, I think you even mentioned it. I do find the legs can definitely handle a little bit higher volume. And I feel like they respond a lot to some higher rep ranges. Now that's not to say don't do your heavy strength work in the lower ends of the rep ranges too, but man, I've seen some pretty gnarly leg growth from programming 25 to 30 rep sets of leg press or rest pause sets above 20 reps, right? It's just like,
yeah.
And you want to talk about testing your will, get into a leg press and do a 30 rep set until you probably had to rack that weight 3 times because you thought it was actually going to crush you.
I remember those. Mark, I remember when I started with Mark, we had like my leg press set and my leg extension set were both rest pauses. And man, dude, I was doing like 20 to 30 rep leg extension sets and like 20 to 30 rep leg press sets.
Yeah.
That was the worst thing.
Yeah. But
it was the best thing because it taught me how to push it through that. So now if I get into that place, I know I'm fine.
Yeah.
A lot of people just don't want to be, they don't like that unsafe feeling. Those are the most memorable sets ever. The pain from a leg extension doing close to 30 reps is you don't remember those sets. Like those are very,
your rec fem is literally screaming, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's also, and again, we'll move on from this, but I think if you start and you have to really be careful about who is doing the high rep sets, because a lot of times people will drop the load so much and go really light to get a high rep range, right? And like that ain't going to induce hypertrophy. I'm sorry, there needs to be enough stimulus where probably the last 10, 12 reps you are like in psycho land, and it's so it's so painful that you can't go anymore. But you've full blown committed to this. Like you're like, I have to hit that number. This hurts so bad, and I'm only at 20 reps, but my head says 30, and it's like, okay, now we go. Now the set actually starts. If your loading is off and it's like easy by the time you're getting to 25, 26 reps, or like moderately hard, you might as well just stop right there or go to 40 or 50.
There you go, Dylan. You're 40 or 50 reps. There you go. Yeah. She also asked the importance of warm-ups. So I'll take this too real quick. I find people do warm-ups very, very wrong. I don't know about you guys. People don't know how to warm up exactly correct when it comes out to it. So the importance of warm-ups is to neurologically get yourself set for that top set. And even get your body primed for that. Get the movement pattern down, get your connection there, like utilize those to really get in the zone for that set. I don't actually take any sets on warmups above 5 reps. I do everything 5 or less. I'll do a lot though. So your first exercise should have a ton of warmups. At least for me, I do. I have like 5 to 6, I have like 5 warmup sets. Like in my first exercise, typically, because it's the first time I just need to get warm. I need to get there. And if I don't do those, I'm fucked for that first exercise. So you may as well just scrap that first exercise. But I'll get up to 2 to 3 reps. Like as I get closer to weight, I'll do 2 to 3 reps. But the importance of it is just to neurologically get set for what's about to come. Because I ran into this. I talked to Dylan about this one time. My client didn't, he was working for me for like 8 months or so at this point, or 9 months it might've been. And he goes, I was like, can I see your warm-up sets or what you're doing for your warm-ups? Cause I saw him like click a random weight on for his top set. And now he's like, what warm-ups? And me and Dylan were like, no. We're like, so you just been doing your 2 sets per exercise and just moving on, no warm-ups, no nothing. He's like, yeah. And I was like oh my god, I was like oh my lord, I was like, you're probably neurologically fucking your body, like just like holy. So your body will respond
and, better. And potentially physically.
And, yeah, yeah. So it's not just it's everything gets your body primed. Like if I try to do my hammer incline, whenever I did like three plates plus a 2.5, because plus 2.5 pounds per side, because natty weight. If I did that and I tried to do that right off the bat, that's probably not even lifting off for one. Whereas yeah. I'll do one plate, two plate, two and a half, two plates plus 35, two plates plus 40, three plates and 2.5. I bet by that time I hit that three plates at 2.5, it feels so much lighter in my hand compared to what I think.
I think too, it really depends whether you're talking about general or specific warmups, right? Like there's value in both. I think a general warm-up, just getting your body temperature up and doing some, for instance, on a, I don't know, on a pull day, you might warm up your shoulders a little bit, do some warm-up sets of shoulder work, right? Because I mean, at the end of the day, the shoulder is heavily involved in pull work still. Now, if you're talking about actual training sets, I agree with you huge time, in the sense that people do way too many warm-ups and you're actually tiring yourself out before the workload should come. Myself, actually, and I can truthfully say this, my favorite way to warm up is realistically doing my first exercise, my first prime mover. I'll pretty much only do warm-up sets on that. And then my other exercises, I'm literally only going to touch a load a little bit less than my top set.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to touch it. Like I'm going to do one or two reps for just a very controlled set, one or two reps. And then I'm going straight to my working set, because quite frankly, if you think about it this way, if you do a very heavy bent over row movement and you've basically warmed up three or four sets, started at five or six reps, then you did two or three, and then you did one rep, you've primed your CNS, you've told your CNS there's a heavy load coming. And then you go and you do a couple sets, working sets, where you take that right to failure. The musculature that you need warm is warm.
Yep.
Now you go do a pull down. You don't have to sit there for 10 minutes doing a bunch of warm-up sets. Your pulling musculature is quite warm. You want to basically neurologically connect to the movement pattern. So you might do a couple reps and tell your body, okay, here's the pattern. This is where I need to be locked in. Here's my tempo. Here's a heavy load. Okay, let's go to work. So like me, when I'm in my best frame and then I feel good and I am having the best sessions, I might have my first exercise, a few warm-up sets, like you said, three or four, bringing load up with reps, descending. But then beyond that, it's pretty much, okay, I'm going to touch a load quickly, or sometimes I might not even touch a load with a movement that I know my pattern is locked in. For instance, my last pull session when I did that isolateral standing row, I know my movement pattern on that is great. I know I connect well with it. I put my working set weight right on there and I go right to work. I'm not wasting any stimulus and not building up any fatigue trying to play around with that movement. I know what I need to do. I know what I need to get done, and I just get it done.
Yep.
I got nothing to add to that.
Do we have any more questions?
I don't know. I think
we done.
There might be.
Unless I forgot to download one.
Let me double check here. I think we got her.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we got one more. We got one more.
What one do we have?
Meal timing. Does it really matter? Why or why not? Can you just hit your macros and still see progress? Or do you need to be eating specific meals at different times during the day? Example, post-workout meal, first meal of the day, etc.
Oh, God. We could make a whole podcast on this question.
Yeah, we could.
In general, I'm going to answer this in general because it is late. So I need to get to bed soon. So in general, yes, whenever your meal timing is important. If you want to do bodybuilding for general athletes, maybe not as much. Of course, we probably all program to have it set in a way that it does take advantage of the peri-workout window, no matter if they're general or if they're bodybuilding. But if you want to maximize your performance, you better be taking meal timing to the max. that's where these small little things make a difference. You shouldn't be having seven, whatever. I'm not going to lay a number out, but you shouldn't only be having like 40 or 50% of your carbs in your pre-workout window. It should be closer to like 65 to 75% of your carbs in your day should be in that, should be in those three things. And take advantage of intra-workout. A lot of people don't take advantage of intra-workout. The amount of people I see come to me and they're like, what's intra? And they're like, their minds are blown how good of performance they have second half of their extra, second half of their workout. So overall it does matter. Meal timing matters. Nutrient quality within those meals matters. Everything with food, if you want to optimize your performance, yes, it matters.
I think a big one with meal timing too that wasn't mentioned is muscle protein synthesis, right? Yep. If you're trying to build muscle efficiently and maximize the amount of muscle you can build and build your best physique possible, well, maximizing and basically, yeah, I guess that's the word, maximizing your ability to stimulate muscle protein synthesis over and over and over throughout a day is going to be very important versus having one meal a day with 300 grams of protein in that meal at the end of the day, right? Because you can only stimulate muscle protein synthesis so much. And when you stimulate that and you've reached that kind of threshold, your body will still digest the protein. It doesn't go not used.
Yeah.
But there what may have been 23 hours in that day where you did not stimulate muscle protein synthesis, right? So having that ability to spike muscle protein synthesis 4, 5, 6 times a day is going to be superior, in my opinion, to a single dose of a heavy, heavy, heavy protein smack. And that's just another side of the coin, I guess.
I tell people to not eat. I had this kid right now, and I kind of redid like his plan because I was looking at, I wanted to ask like how he's separating his meals out because I wanted him to learn, right? And he was doing like some meals were like 70, 80 grams of protein.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, that's half your body weight in protein.
Yeah.
Meal. I was like, you're not going to, I was like, I have your protein set at like 240 grams. Like you should probably shouldn't be having just 80 grams of protein in a meal.
And realistically, like, realistically, you're still going to digest it.
Yes.
But
I'd rather you separate that into 240s, and hit a meal and hit like a protein right before you go to bed or something like that.
Yes.
So you'll be good. Hit five. I tell people I really want optimally 5 meals a day. Like if you can, that's like that optimal state, or at least 5 protein servings. 4 whole meals, 5 protein servings.
Depending on food amounts too, right? But
yes.
Another thing I guess that's also important, and we won't track this one on too long because I know you can't be here for too long, but digestion, right? Like your digestion capabilities. Yes. And this is something that I know for myself, and this is just, I'll just speak to myself because I know myself better than I know anybody. When I train legs, I simply cannot digest food for a minimum 90 to 120 minutes after. I feel like shit when I eat in that window after training legs. That is too soon because my CNS is still so fried. It not only, it affects my digestion, which is brutal, but then that starts to affect my thinking patterns, and it affects me neurologically and my emotions as a person, because then I'm just miserable that I feel a certain way and I can't perform well in other areas of my life. Versus I would rather come home from the gym, sit on my computer and work for an hour and a half and let my body chill out. I take my Calm, let my body just chill. And then all of a sudden my appetite comes back. That's when I eat, right? Like there's a reason why you don't have your appetite at that moment in time. It's not because, and it might be because you just ate your pre-workout meal too soon before training and you feel like shit. But if that's the case, maybe eat your pre-workout meal sooner. But most of the time, like when you feel like that and you have no appetite and you're just like, oh, it's because your CNS is fried and you need to let it come back because, well, we all know, rest and digest, right? It's a very, that's a pretty simple one, I think. Get into a parasympathetic state versus a sympathetic state and you're going to digest your food better. And that's a big one. If you're eating meals so large that your digestion is shit, you probably should have smaller meals and have improved digestion from that. And that's not even talking about the post-workout window. That's just in general. Don't eat more than you can digest in a single sitting. If you feel like shit, you've probably overdone it.
Just rule of thumb. I noticed pretty much most females be like 4 meals a day, guys 5. So probably.
Yep. Yeah, that works.
And then negotiate based on case to case basis.
So you get up to like, so you get up to like 300 plus grams of protein, you're like, ah, six meals. You're like, there it is. Then you got to get into that six meal territory.
That's one thing, I guess it's bodybuilding bro science that you need six meals a day, right? Like for me, I know for a fact with my time and my life, because that's another important thing to consider, is somebody's life. If they can't structure their entire life around six meals a day, five meals a day might be optimal. I know for me, that is my sweet spot. My best place is five meals a day, because I like waking up, having a liter of water and waiting an hour or even longer before I have my first meal. I feel amazing when I do that. Versus if I hop my ass out of bed to have my first meal and eat ASAP, and then on clockwork have six meals, I just don't feel as good. So it's case by case.
Yeah. So we'll definitely dive into this more probably next time, just because I feel like we gave it justice, but I feel like we could dive fully into this topic in general. So we'll definitely answer this in a more depth over. We'll definitely hit points. So you may have, whoever just asked this question, you may have given us a whole podcast episode.
That was my client, Lindsay. She also asked the glute pick kickback question.
Awesome. Well, Fat Boys should be back next. Fat Boys are going to be back next week. We're only coaches corner now when we got to do Q&As. We're Fat Boys otherwise. But we appreciate you guys asking questions. We actually got some good questions this time. So and glad we were able to answer those more in a timely fashion than last time. We definitely didn't take as long to answer questions. We hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you guys did, definitely go subscribe to the podcast. You can now leave a 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. So there is a click on Spotify. If you just click on the star thing underneath the podcast name, it just helps ratings get higher, helps us get out more. You guys have been absolutely smashing these episodes for us. Like, I think our first Q&A has like 300 downloads or something right now, which is pretty high for a single episode. So we really do appreciate whoever listens to this. We know you're probably doing cardio right now while you're doing it. So we truly appreciate you guys taking the time out of your day to listen to it. And hopefully we get you through those sessions. Go follow Dylan, go follow Braden. I'm exhausted. Go subscribe to the podcast, leave 5-star rating, leave a review, share on Instagram that you're listening, tag us on your stories, do whatever you want to do. We'll be back next week. Obviously we said this standing out, we're going to do a Q&A every third week. So make sure that you guys get in your questions whenever we do it again. If you have any more, we'll be sure to answer them. But we appreciate you guys listening. And thank you guys for listening to this episode of Coach's Corner on the Ace of Spit podcast.
Later.
See you guys later.